The Ethnostate, an unblinkered prospectus for an advanced statecraft, by Wilmot Robertson. To the brave and indomitable enabler. Set roses here, surround her only with such maidens as speak her tongue. Edna St. Vincent Millay, The Hardy Garden. Foreword. In an earlier book, The Dispossessed Majority, the author was hopeful, but not too hopeful, that a sharp white backlash to minority racism and cultural degeneration might save what appeared to be the doomed United States. 20 years ago, he still believed it possible that his moribund country could revive, clean out its political and cultural Augean stables, and establish a Pax Americana that would herald a new age of peace, plenty, and progress. Now that more than 2 decades have passed, events are proving that America, as we have known it, is beyond saving. The majority, that is, the northern and western European elements of the population, has lost whatever chance it had to recapture the country it ruled for more than 2 centuries. Defeatist as it may sound, this does not mean it's too late to save the majority as a people. This could be effected by breaking up the United States into small, independent regions established in the areas where most of America's various population groups are concentrated and gathered. The same process of fragmentation and regrouping might save the peoples of Western Europe, who are also in a period of steep social and cultural decline, though by no means to the same extent as the American majority. What is called for is a new form of government that would transform socially destructive into socially constructive forces. Race, now actively tearing countries apart, might be helpful in putting them back together, but this time in the form of autonomous, relatively self-sufficient collectives that the author has chosen to designate as ethnostates. Since nothing else seems to be working, since every new day brings with it new demographic horrors, a little rethinking of the fundamental themes and axioms of modern statecraft might be in order. Although the author is an American, he will not confine his remarks to what used to be his country, but will aim many of them overseas. Inescapably, however, his emphasis will be on the United States, not only because of his birth and upbringing, but also because what is happening in the Western world in these parlous times is happening first in America. To employ Spengler's term, but without accepting his organic view of history, the decline of the West is accelerating faster in the United States than elsewhere. Consequently, the suggestions advanced in this book for halting and reversing this decline should have the highest priority for Euro-Americans, the most threatened of all white population groups, South African whites excepted. Europeans and their racial cousins in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand have more time and may get out of their rut with less effort, though the chances that their social order will survive the battering of minority racism and decadent liberalism in the long term are not significantly better. Introduction. We have all heard more than enough of world revolution in the 20th century. Mass graves are filled with people who were executed with revolutionary and counter-revolutionary phrases ringing in their ears. It is now abundantly clear that instead of putting mankind on the right track to a successful social order, the compass of revolution, particularly revolutionary Marxism, has steered millions, tens of millions, and hundreds of millions onto the reefs of economic sterility, political breakdown, and social disease. It is indicative of the deep slough of mental confusion in which we are mired that Darwinism, the most plausible theory to explain the origin and development of life forms, is still believed, when believed at all, as a sort of evil truth, while Marxism, which in both theory and practice has proved to be irreparably flawed, is, despite the recent events in the Soviet Union, still looked upon favorably by large segments of the world's intelligentsia. If Darwin is right, or closest to being right, is it not time to organize mankind according to his rules of organic development and close our ears to the a priori fulminations of class warriors? By Darwinism, of course, is not meant social Darwinism, a Hobbesian scenario of people fighting tooth and claw for survival in a solipsistic frenzy of produce and consume. To Darwin, survival of the fittest, Herbert Spencer's term, meant simply that life forms which adapted most skillfully to their environments had the best chances of producing an enduring line of progeny. Neo-Darwinians take advantage of Mendelian genetics to propose that the beneficial mutations which increase an organism's opportunities of survival will in some cases result in the creation of a new and occasionally higher species. Since this process works most effectively in isolated groups, it is only reasonable to suppose that it would operate more successfully for men and women living in small homogeneous states than in vast multiracial political imperiums where beneficial mutations, especially if they occurred in recessive genes, would be swamped before they could take hold in a large population mix. It is not too difficult to play tricks with Hegelian dialectics. Marx proposed that feudalism, thesis, passed into capitalism, antithesis, only to be resolved by communism, synthesis. Why not monoracial feudal fiefdoms, thesis, evolving into huge multiracial political agglomerations, antithesis, eventually to be resolved by ethnostates, synthesis. Wordplay aside, the ethnostate can be defined as the political entity best suited to accelerate human evolution. The ultimate goal of most forms of socialism is one world, one society, one race, a political end times that flies in the face of the biological process which produced man, the greatest of all biological marvels. The evolution of all living things has been generated by variety, by genetic branching, by the synergistic mechanics of speciation in which different phyla, genera, and races branch out in all directions, some to extinction, some, much less frequently, to a higher evolutionary grade. What is more drab than a continent-sized garden containing only one kind of flower? What would be more eye-catching than a landscape dotted with innumerable small gardens, each with its own array of distinct blooms, each tilled and fertilized in such a way as to bring out the fullest fragrance, color, and beauty of its floral riches? The ever-present urge to worldwide conformity would seem to augur a winding down of evolution. A faint death rattle can already be heard in the ecumenical squawks of Western politicians and liberal churchmen, and in the ear-piercing cacophony of most modern music, both popular and serious. If all civilization is not threatened, at least certain civilized peoples are. The most threatened are the whites, whose low birth rates can be mathematically represented by a curve converging almost to zero. Endangered species, ethnic suicide, and genocide are not unduly exaggerated terms for what is happening to the same race which only a few short centuries ago was dispatching its large population surplus to the ends of the earth. The antidote to the present crisis, to the ever-echoing, serenic call of one world, is not counter-revolution. It is something even more extreme. It is devolution, which is not a reversal of revolution. Devolution proceeds from the big to the small, from the roof to the foundation, from erratic electrons to the stable nucleus. World revolution is an explosion. World devolution is an implosion. A contraction, a recoiling from a unitary to a diversified world, from top-heavy, ungainly empires and artificially contrived states to more manageable, core states, where society rests on the hard rock of genes and culture instead of the quicksands of proletariat myths, egalitarian fantasies, and retouched history. To put it in crass political terms, devolution is the surrender or delegation of powers formerly held by a central government to regional or provincial authorities. Footnote: many words with the D and dis prefix will appear throughout this study. Decomposition, degeneration, deteriorate, disintegrate, disestablish, displace. The one that will appear most often, devolution, is the word that is likely to be the most misunderstood. The principal dictionary definition of devolution is quite plain. The transference, as of rights, powers, or responsibility, to another, especially the surrender of powers to local authorities by central government. The earth abounds with population groups whose distinct characteristics set them apart. Some fit the description of races. Others are better described as subraces or ethnic groups. although it is the intellectual fashion these days to deny or downplay serious and significant human variations, particularly variations in intelligence and character, population groups do possess a matrix of visible and invisible differences, different physical and mental traits, different art styles, as well as different gods. The ethnostate is designed to accommodate and profit from group differences by giving Mother Nature her head and enlisting Darwinism in the service of political science. Who can say that evolutionary theory is not as qualified as other non-political theories to intrude into world politics? Darwinism is not an ideology. It is a complex biological hypothesis about the chain of being. It is not a wild syllogistic leap to infer that the ground rules of organic evolution might have some application to the organic institutions known as states. If new biological species evolve more rapidly and successfully in isolation, so might species of politics. If different environments call forth and stimulate immense powers of adaptation in all living things, why should not a mosaic of the world's, or at least the West's, population groups maximize such powers? Primitive ethnostates once existed where isolated tribes existed. Several city-states of ancient Greece might have qualified as model ethnostates, were it not for the Greek propensity for slavery. Reviewing the Western past, the author suggests that perhaps the closest political entities to what he has in mind were some city-states in medieval Italy and Germany. Today, when we have virtually removed nature from our daily life, it might be wise and timely to let her work her wonders again, this time with intelligent human cooperation. At this point, no one, neither man nor nature, is in charge of the selective process that lifted us out of the soup of a primeval sea. In fact, in many areas of the world, evolution seems to be running backwards. Devoting some serious thought to devolution and the ethnostate concept might help put it back on track.